Welcome to Hacker News Daily on Bree Radio. I'm Mia, and I'm here with Milo. Today we're covering a big Meta settlement over child safety, an AI transcription launch from Google, and a PayPal app that won't run on a privacy-focused Android build.
We've also got a Googler's case that small AI models have arrived, a broken yet somehow working FFmpeg fuzzer, and a guide to Umfantasia for listeners who can't picture things in their mind.
Plus, a look at the language of Claude, a Nintendo 64 game decompiled in under 3 months, and Cloudflare trimming roughly 100 terabytes of memory across its fleet.
Plenty to get into, so let's start with the Meta settlement. Meta has settled with 52 state and local attorneys general who sued over child safety, and the consent judgment caps the total at about $16.7 billion. Meta's own press release rounds that to roughly $18 billion, while the article puts the figure somewhere between $12.7 and $18 billion.
That spread tells you the dollar figure matters less than what the settlement buys. Meta commits to child safety platform changes, but will encourage YouTube and TikTok to enable the same features. And if they do, Meta has to pay more. Mike Masnick's take is that structure exists because no government could force those changes without running into the First Amendment. So courts may eventually decide whether choices Meta could make freely on its own have become state action.
Advocacy groups frame the visible trade-off as privacy. The EFF warns that age assurance baked into every product means more personal information collected from users of all ages, and young users lose ground on speaking, accessing information, art and culture, and building communities. Fight for the Future adds that online 499 checks put vital information behind age gates, and the data collected under this agreement could still end up used for other law enforcement purposes, including criminal investigations tied to abortion or gender-affirming care. A Hacker News user reports the PayPal app now crashes on opening in Graphene OS, throwing a root detection security policy violation with Google Play services enabled at the time. They weren't sure whether it tied to enabling the PayPal card for contactless NFC payments.
What stands out is the workaround. Disabling secure app spawning seemed to fix it for now, though that's untested rather than confirmed. A commenter even asked whether that means PayPal isn't blocking Graphene OS, and the thread split on what the exception really signals. One camp reads it as flagging a rooted device. Another asked whether it meant the app ran with root privileges. Graphene OS generally isn't rooted. One commenter noted it can be rooted without a custom build, but the community then treats the result as no longer Graphene OS. Root tends to be inferred through indirect indicators, like custom ROM detection, an approach some recalled from the Suicide days.
The security rationale itself got challenged. One side says a rooted phone lets downloaded malware gain root and make payments on your behalf, which is why PayPal forbids it. The counter is that malware may do the same on non-rooted phones through privilege escalation, and the only data available comes from companies selling root prevention tools. So reliable statistics on the actual risk haven't been established. A Hacker News discussion around a division by zero bug found in FFmpeg turned into a debate about whether AI is raising or lowering software quality. The opening argument is that it's cheap to send an AI agent on an open-ended bug hunt. If it finds nothing after wasting time and effort, no big deal. Whereas that same waste costs a salaried human developer.
That framing seems backwards on the surface, though, because the authoring style, they call it a vibe-coded fuzzer, means the AI wasn't used to review existing code, but to build the tool that found the FFmpeg bug in the first place. So the time cost point lands differently when the agent is doing the searching for you.
That's the real tension. Whether the economics of unlimited agent effort genuinely improve outcomes. A human developer burns salary hours on a failed search, so there's a disincentive to run deep exploratory hunts at all. An AI agent changes that marginal cost, which is exactly why the conversation about quality went sideways. The bug was found, but nobody's settled whether that's the beginning of better software or just more noise to triage.
Writing after weeks with GPT-5.6 Luna, Calvin Frenchoman reports it as shockingly capable, fast, and smart. Around 100 tokens per second across his codebase, email, and knowledge base, with API costs in the tens of cents even after searching thousands of emails. His headline, "What used to cost about a dollar with the previous Sonnet class generation now averages around 10 cents with Luna."
He's not claiming it replaces the frontier. He still reaches for Fable 5 and the 5.6 SOAR for coding work, while calling GLM 5.3 a new option at the Pareto frontier. What's striking is his own division of labor. His Segment co-founder Peter, who's raised over $100 million for Charm Industrial and recently closed a Series A for Revoy, puts about 95% of his own work in the token spewer bucket rather than the IQ-180 bucket, even though his companies would be dead in the water without an IQ-180 technical mind.
That split is the crux of the thread. One commenter says small models became good enough for most tasks a while back. Another counters that mostly means glorified autocomplete. People still chase frontier models for hard algorithm problems where a week becomes an hour. And a third simply disagrees they're good enough for most tasks at all. French Owen's own read is that frontier demand keeps compounding while cheap and good enough demand takes off, with harnesses, prompt injection safety, roles, and permissions still unresolved.
A developer called Knackers has published a breakdown of decompiling a Nintendo 64 game in 84 days, and the Hacker News thread around it is really about method. Commenter Ombre_Fatal argues the real takeaway is what you can build once you lean into large language models and nail one high-quality, rigorous project with them, saying the workflow becomes mechanical and you end up limited mainly by your own time and energy, token budgets, and your discretion on how to spend them.
And that implies the bottleneck stops being the technical work itself and starts being the daily practical constraints, so that 84-day timeline reads as a function of stamina as much as of the 1,000 tooling.
A Show Hacker News post by Labo333 shares an article about what they call the load-bearing vocabulary of Claude, and the discussion turns into a real argument about how the model writes. Commenter Srausi was surprised the word vacuous didn't make the list and said the word selection and style have taken the joy out of using Claude. When user 43928 said they also missed the latch that wedged their test run, Srausi shot back that wedged fits a stuck test run, but latch doesn't. Then wondered whether the EU AI Act is interfering with everything Claude does, saying as a non-EU citizen, he wants a version without rewriting or watermarking in text.
But the frustration goes deeper than word choice. Fix some sick dash work, $7 of so many, said Claude's style is obnoxious, while its inscrutable explanations are more frustrating, claiming you'd need a PhD to understand its explanation of a simple code snippet. Condiment attributed that to hierarchies of agents summarizing each other's summaries before the final answer, so the principal agent distills its workers' full context into confident jargon about a conversation the user never saw. Labo333 said even a PhD might not help, since Claude overuses jargon with no real meaning and sometimes hand waves while trying to dumb things down, and it's unclear whether that comes from learning to reason from its own traces or from the reinforcement learning that makes it reach for weird terms to sound smarter to human raters.
A commenter holding a PhD, Black_Knight, confirms the output can be genuinely impenetrable because Claude invents jargon on the fly and abuses verbs. FNY then clarified the PhD remark was a joke and added that Claude may just be trained to communicate to itself while coding, which shows in how granularly it explains prior work and in the comments it leaves behind. Google announced Gemini 3.5 Transcribe on August 26th, calling it the company's most precise speech-to-text model yet and positioning it for intelligent voice interactions. According to Google, unlike conventional speech recognition models that struggle with background noise, complex jargon, and cleaning up disfluencies, this one converts raw audio directly into accurate, polished, formatted text. It's already reaching consumers through voice capabilities like Rambler on Android and the Gemini app on macOS, and developers can tap it through the Gemini API in Google AI Studio and the Gemini Enterprise Agent platform.
On the API side, there are two routes. The live version, Gemini-3.5 Transcribe Live, runs through the Live API for continuous bidirectional streaming with sub-second latency, while the standard Gemini-3.5 Transcribe runs through the Interactions API for pre-recorded audio with speaker attribution and word-level timestamps. Google also describes it as capturing natural speaking style, understanding intent, and recognizing custom vocabulary. But the Hacker News thread pushes back on how it actually behaves in the real world. Jeff B. argued that word error rate misses the persistent transcription problems that actually matter, like random sentence break insertion, errors that never get caught, and hard cursor-based correction. And on availability, Gumby2Doven71 said the announcement claims it's in Gboard on Android, but it's not visible yet, expecting a rolling release spread over several months, while Bamboo added that as far as they can tell, Rambler for Android looks like a named sub-feature of Gboard available only on Pixel 10 and newer Samsung phones.
There's new research out of Science laying out a dual-layered model for how autism mutations drive changes at the molecular level. The paper's conclusion frames it as molecular convergence happening through two routes: shared interaction networks in the wild-type state, the normal unaffected state, and then a second layer connecting the mutations to neurodevelopmental pathology. The study is titled Autism Mutations Drive Neurodevelopmental Pathology.
And someone on the thread, Kyo_20211030, is asking the open-ended question, directly for reasons, whether anyone can say what the findings mean in a concrete or actionable sense. So the Science describes a mechanism for how these mutations converge, but translating that into day-to-day practical use isn't something the paper itself steps through, at least not in what's been shared on the thread.
So the Hacker News thread on malaria deaths in Germany has two airport workers dying after contracting the disease, with the Reuters reporting centered on a mosquito that hitched a plane ride and arrived aboard the flight itself.
The real debate in the comments was a question about whether this could make malaria endemic in Germany. One commenter pushed back directly on that, arguing the mosquitoes only survive in tropical and subtropical regions.
And that same commenter pointed to a concerted effort to treat cases and reduce habitat as enough to stop it, noting the United States wiped malaria out in the 1950s, with new cases largely stopped.
There's a session circulating about engineered yeast that's meant to convert plastic and biomass compounds into food. The story links to an American Chemical Society session on the work. The real question that came up in the discussion was whether any of this bacteria converting plastic to fuel or food is actually operating at scale anywhere under economically reasonable conditions. One commenter answered in spirit with a cultural reference rather than a technical one, pulling the old Doomwatch episode about airliners falling out of the sky as a caution on the theme.
A beginner's guide to aphantasia is doing the rounds, and the comments show it landing hard with people who grew up not realizing they processed images differently. One person said learning they had aphantasia several years back opened their eyes to a lot of things. Their example clues are the ones most people don't connect: the instruction to picture a beach when meditating, the trick of imagining the audience naked before a presentation, counting sheep to fall asleep, undressing someone with your eyes. All of those assume a mental image some people genuinely don't generate.
Cloudflare published a post about a Rust-level optimization run on its DNS cache layout, and the headline number is big. Roughly 100 terabytes of memory saved across its fleet. The change cut each entry's memory by 56%. The insight that kicked the debate off came from a commenter quoting the post. Once a DNS response is stored in the cache, it never gets modified. So the VEC capacity field is useless and still costs 8 bytes per entry. That person asked whether design reviews should have caught such a trivial issue, and the reply was blunt. The system was working, so nobody thought to check. The discussion then turned to whether that counts as premature optimization. One commenter noted that with memory now up to 10 times more expensive, programs with large memory footprints are worth the revisit. Another pushed back that using obviously better data structures the first time isn't premature optimization at all. The counterpoint was that early optimization often isn't worth it because you don't know how popular a system will get or how many records it will hold, and the code may even have been ported as is from an earlier language. And in that reading, revisiting only at the point someone is actually querying 100 terabytes of RAM brings its own migration path and fallback risks. The thread eventually circled to how you decide which path to take up front, with one commenter arguing that discussing trivial optimizations just wastes valuable design time while the running system keeps working. The Suica thread started with the same question people always circle back to. How does a card with no battery actually work? One commenter laid it out plainly. The reader on the gate emits an electromagnetic field, and that field powers the card just long enough to complete the transaction.
Right, and another commenter pushed back that this is just how all passive RFID works, then brought up Disney Magic Bands as the hybrid case. Those have a battery, but they still work passively. The battery matters for attaching ride photos automatically, because a rider can be moving too fast or be too far from the camera for passive reading to stay reliable. For actual payment, pressing the band to a reader works no matter the battery age.
Someone took that on and argued passive RFID would handle ride photos fine, since it works at highway speeds and over 15 meters. But they flagged two genuine radio layer problems. Tag antenna geometry is critical, which makes the band form factor awkward, and backscatter gets almost perfectly absorbed by people who are basically saltwater blobs.
The history thread was fun, too. One person remembered AT&T's 80s TV commercials predicting toll booths without stopping, and a reply tied that to AT&T's 90s You Will campaign. Many of those predictions did happen, maybe not faxing from the beach. Though the commenter noted AT&T itself wasn't the one delivering very many of them. On real-world use, people with first-hand experience reported Apple Pay's Suica version working flawlessly and being so universal they couldn't complain, though one said they think they prefer U.S. Tap to Pay. The other thread everyone is reading is M5 Stack's launch of Paper Mono, a compact e-ink development terminal aimed at connected projects.
And right in the discussion, the first serious take is a warning about expectations. One commenter said they wouldn't anticipate too much from M5 Stack because while their products tend to be well-designed physically, once you sit down to develop with them, you find the software and support needed to hit your goals fall short of what you'd hope.
So to close it out, Meta has settled with dozens of state attorneys general over child safety, with the total landing somewhere between $12.5 and $18 billion. And meanwhile, PayPal appears to be crashing on GrapheneOS, flagging it over a security policy, though the fix was still uncertain.
Thanks for sticking around with us today. That wraps this one up. Take care.